VOA News. I'm Laurel Bowman. Hamas said it was battling Israeli troops on the outskirts of the Gaza Strip's crowded southern city of Rafah on Wednesday after a U.S. official said Washington had halted a shipment of powerful bombs that Israel could use in a full-scale assault. More on that from VOA's Tommy McNeil.
According to an administration official, the shipment was supposed to consist of 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 1,700 500-pound bombs, with the focus of U.S. concern being the larger explosives and how they could be used in a dense urban setting. More than 1 million civilians are sheltering in Rafah after evacuating other parts of Gaza amid Israel's war and Hamas, which came after the militant group's deadly attack on Israel on October 7th. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
The United States said it believes a revised Hamas ceasefire proposal may lead to a breakthrough in negotiations, with talks resuming in Cairo, Egypt on Wednesday. And the AP's Charles de Ledesma reports that Russian attacks aim to cripple Ukraine's power network.
Russian forces have unleashed a nighttime barrage of more than 50 cruise missiles and explosive drones at Ukraine's power grid, targeting a wide area in what President Volodymyr Zelensky calls a massive attack. The bombardment blasted targets in seven Ukrainian regions, including the Kyiv area and parts of the south and west, damaging homes and the country's rail network, authorities say. Three people, including an eight-year-old girl, were injured, according to officials. The attacks drained Ukrainian air defences of ammunition as Kyiv's depleted forces await delivery of the latest batch of promised Western military support. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And the Olympic flame arrives in France ahead of the 2024 Paris Games. This is VOA News. A court in Pakistan granted a request on Wednesday by the wife of former Prime Minister Imran Khan to be moved to jail, her lawyer said, instead of the house arrest ordered by the government. In her petition to the Islamabad High Court, Bushra Bibi had accused authorities of violating her privacy and serving contaminated food in her home cell, which she and her lawyers said was dominated by men, a charge the prison staff has denied. Rescuers have been rushing to evacuate people stranded by devastating floods across the southern Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul, leaving many dozens dead and thousands homeless. Reuters' Laila Shayaroki reports.
The deluge has left at least 90 dead and over 150,000 homeless, with many desperate survivors seeking food and basic supplies. Relatives waited at the shore of the Guaíba River in the state capital of Porto Alegre to find their loved ones on the boats that brought rescued people from flood-hit areas. Taina Silva is still waiting for news on her husband.
My daughter won't stop crying. There are firefighters there, but they say they can't do anything from there, so I should come here and ask the firefighters here if they can save my husband there.
The flooding has made rescue efforts even tougher, with dozens of people still waiting to be evacuated by boat or helicopter from rain-stricken homes.
That was Reuters' Laila Shahrukshahi reporting. TikTok and its Chinese parent company ByteDance said they filed suit in U.S. federal court seeking to block a law signed by President Joe Biden that would force the divestiture of the short video app used by 170 million Americans, or ban its use, Reuters' Diane Toh reports.
The companies filed their lawsuit in a Washington, D.C. federal court on Tuesday, arguing that the legislation violates the U.S. Constitution on free speech protections, among other grounds. The law, signed by President Joe Biden on April 24th, gives ByteDance until January 19th to sell TikTok or see the app banned in the U.S. In the lawsuit, the companies complained that the government's singling out of the platform is unprecedented. They say there was no question that the move will, quote, force a shutdown of TikTok by January 19, 2025, silencing the 170 million Americans who use the platform to communicate in ways that cannot be replicated elsewhere.
That was Reuters' Diane Toh reporting. The documentary about the Beatles just before the band's breakup in 1970 hits screens again for the first time in decades. It's called Let It Be. I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News Tonight.
For 4 years now, we have not had any maternal death in our clinics that we serve in Nyarugusu camp in Kigoma region. And first point that contributed to that, for sure, is adhering to Ministry of Health guidelines to address maternal and newborn mortality rate.
That was Deborah Niaya, the Tanzanian director for Medical Teams International, on her group celebrating no deaths in two Tanzanian refugee camps. Details coming up. Also, Human Rights Watch reports on war crimes committed in central Mali. And two poachers were recently shot to death by Namibian law enforcement officials. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Just a short time ago, Kenya's health ministry announced the government has reached a deal with striking doctors after a walkout that lasted 56 days. Footage on NTV Kenya television showed representatives of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union signing the agreement. More than 7,000 union members went on strike on March 15th over payment, the hiring of trainee doctors and other grievances. The strike crippled public hospitals and left many Kenyans few options for health care. You'll be able to find more on this story on voaafrica.com in the coming hours. And in more stories from Kenya, some residents of Nairobi's suburbs are up in arms over what they say is illegal construction of high-rise buildings in their estates, mainly by Chinese contractors. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
In Nairobi's Kilimani suburbs, residents like Cherotich say are pondering their next move to stop what they say is illegal construction in their estate.
What we are suffering from now is unplanned construction. If you don't have sewage, you don't have wider roads, you don't have fire stations, you don't have enough schools, you don't have hospitals, all you're doing is just building and building and building accommodation without the requisite planning.
Kilimani is one of the areas where residents are speaking out against the construction of high-rise buildings. Architect Alfred Omenya heads urban development consultancy EcoBuild Africa.
A lot of the buildings that we are seeing around here do not even meet that same City Hall's development control requirements. And they're approved in City Hall. They're actually approved in City Hall. And I can say this without fear of contradiction. For donkey years, City Hall has been the citadel of corruption.
Cherotich claims Chinese firms are using corrupt practices to circumvent legal procedures.
And I really call out the Chinese Property Developers Association here. They're complicit. They have understood the propensity and appetite for corruption that you find in this county, and they have exploited it to the hilt.
City government officials declined VOA's request for comment, and Chinese builders did not respond to VOA's request for a response to the claims. Economist XN Iraqi, however, says Chinese contractors have brought efficiency to the construction industry.
Rest they have the competition. I think that is going to raise the Kenyan construction industry. The Kenyan expertise are going to run something. In the long run, the customers are going to benefit because there's no competition. We shall do shoulder work. We cannot be efficient.
The Kenyan constitution requires involvement of citizens on governance decisions on issues that affect them. Henry Ochieng is the chief executive officer of the Kenya Alliance of Resident Associations.
Whereas the law provides very elaborately about public participation, and we have adequate legislation around that, but the practice itself is still being done as a lip service. We still have the government officers calling for public participation when they've already made a decision. So they're doing it just to tick the boxes.
Heavy rains and deadly flooding in Kenya recently are compounding problems caused by unplanned construction, says Omenya.
By the time you have those high-rise buildings, you are not likely, especially in these areas where we look at one-acre development, the entire space is going to be concrete. Where does that water go?
And as the World Bank projects 70% of the global population will live in cities by 2050, experts say planning will be key for cities like Nairobi. Juma, Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch, in a report today, said an extremist group linked to Al-Qaeda carried out mass killings in two villages in central Mali in January, and that this apparent war crime has caused thousands to flee their homes. The group known as Jinim killed at least 32 people, including three children, during attacks on January 27th on the villages of Ogota and Uamba, and set fire to over 350 homes. The report also documented a separate incident in which an ethnic armed group killed 13 people and abducted 24 civilians in two other villages in central Mali on January 6th. The Associated Press, quoting Human Rights Watch, says the attacks are part of a cycle of retaliatory killings in central Mali where extremists and ethnic armed groups operate. Survivors of the attacks told Human Rights Watch they were targeted because of their ethnicity and urged the government to do more to protect them. Mali, along with its neighbors Burkina Faso and Niger, has battled an insurgency by armed groups, including some allied with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. Two suspected poachers were recently shot to death by Namibian law enforcement officials who say the men had opened fire on police while being pursued for allegedly poaching in the Etosha National Park. A Namibian activist says poverty and inequality lead to wildlife crime, but police say they may shoot at anyone who brings guns into the park where weapons are banned. Vitalio Angwala reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Namibia has seen a recent surge in rhino poaching, with 28 rhinos killed in the first 4 months of this year, compared to seven in the same period of 2023. The police commander for Etosha National Park, Teopolina Nashikaku, says officers will not hesitate to use deadly force against suspected poachers. Two alleged poachers were killed recently by law enforcement in the park.
Only authorized personnel and only authorized security personnel are permitted to carry firearms. So if we meet you being the person who want to carry firearm in that restricted environment, if we just meet you trying to cross the boundary into the national park, or if we find you inside the park, of course, we shall assist you to return to your maker.
Michael Amushelelo, a Namibian activist and commissar for economic development of the Namibian Economic Freedom Fighters, a political party in Namibia, says the high levels of poverty and inequality fuel wildlife crime.
You cannot tell me that you have an entire army, you have an entire police force, you've got the Directorate of Ranger Parks, but still our wildlife are still being killed like there is no one protecting them.
Romeo Miunda is a spokesperson of the Environment Ministry, tasked with the protection of Namibia's wildlife. He says the killing of the suspects is an isolated incident that doesn't take into account the many arrests that are made without harm being done on the suspects.
You would never see an activist come, especially when we are apprehending poachers without crossfire, because that is what we do. This incident is isolated. I'm sure this is the first of many that one have had in happening in Namibia. That means that we have been apprehending poachers, sometimes in the park, sometimes outside the park without fire. And it doesn't make it a status quo. This is not how we operate.
A press release issued by the Namibian police on Friday says that an exchange of gunfire at Etosha National Park earlier that week led to the death of two suspected poachers. They were pursued for over 60 kilometers and opened fire on the police, resulting in the police returning fire that led to their deaths. Vitalio Angula, Windhoek, Namibia.
The United Nations voiced concern today after dozens of cases of cholera were reported in Kenya, which has been hit by weeks of destructive rains and floods. The World Health Organization says 44 cases of the disease have been reported in Tana River County in eastern Kenya, one of the areas hardest hit by widespread flooding. The French news agency AFP reports that the United Nations resident coordinator in Kenya expressed confidence that the government, along with national and international partners, will be able to contain the illness. Cholera is an acute intestinal infection that spreads through contaminated food and water and typically causes severe diarrhea, vomiting, and muscle cramps. It can be especially dangerous for young children. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Please note that we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Maternal mortality is on the rise in several places around the world, including some U.S. cities. But in Tanzania, Medical Teams International has been able to achieve a rate of zero maternal deaths over the past 4 years in the Nyarugusu and Ndutu refugee camps. Medical Teams International Country Director for Tanzania, Deborah Niyaya, explains to VOA's Carol Van Dam how her group has been able to accomplish that feat.
For sure, we are celebrating that achievement because in 2015, the overall Tanzania, we had more than 500 maternal mortality ratio per 1,000 live birth. But now in Tanzania in 2022, the data shows that we have 100 and plus. For 4 years now, we have not had any maternal death in our clinics that we serve in Nyarugusu camp in Kigoma region. And first point that contributed to that, for sure, is adhering to Ministry of Health guidelines to address maternal and newborn mortality rate. That contributed to maternal mortality death.
Well, give us some specific examples. Like, what do you guys do that make sure that the mom is in good health and the baby's in good health when the baby's born?
Sure. So in Tanzania, we do antenatal clinics. And now, when you identify yourself as pregnancy, you have to start antenatal clinic for pregnant women. And we are promoting also fathers to attend because the message is it's cut across the community. And when a woman attend at a neonatal clinic, they receive their intervention. We have a package of intervention. So, for example, they are promoted to attend early before 3 months because they will start early their iron and folate supplementation, because we all know that failure to attain relevant levels of blood on women cause death. They will receive their malaria prophylaxis in the second and third trimester. That one protects them with malaria cases because, you know, Tanzania, as other tropical countries, we have a huge rate of malaria. Number two, I can say, is consistent funding, because we cannot say it's adequate, but it's something that is helping us. We are receiving funding from Bureau of Population and Refugee Migration from U.S. government. We are receiving resources from United Nations High Commission for Refugee, which is UNHCR. They are giving us funding, and also medical team. We have our private funding resources.
Why are there so many people living in these refugee camps in Tanzania? You've got hundreds of thousands in these two camps. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Tanzania, we are receiving refugee from Burundi and Congo. And the region that is hosting refugee is the region that is bordering both Burundi and Congo. And now with Congo, they have political unrest, so a lot of people running to Tanzania. And Burundians, of course, they had issues back in 2015, 2016. So we have a lot of them coming to Tanzania. And Tanzania has been receiving a refugee, I think, way long from the country that are neighboring to us, because we have peace and a lot of people running to our case. And currently in Tanzania, we are hosting more than 200,000 refugee in our camps.
That's Deborah Niyaya, Medical Team International Country Director for Tanzania. She was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Portland, Oregon. There is concern about how artificial intelligence, or AI, is going to affect people's health in developing countries, especially Africa. Medicines are increasingly being developed with AI technology. The problem, some scientists tell VOA, is that the drugs are being tested on Western populations and may not work well for Africans. Darren Taylor explains.
Scientists in wealthy countries are using artificial intelligence programs to design drugs that are more effective in treating diseases such as cancer. Colin Hill is founder of Atea, one of the world's first biomedicine companies using AI to discover better drugs to cure and treat disease. At a recent conference at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he said AI is set to revolutionize medicine.
On the discovery and development of new drugs, what are the problems that we have to solve? First off, we have to figure out what's the right drug target. Out of all of the gene products, and we have hundreds of thousands of them, what do we need to hit to stop Alzheimer's or colorectal cancer? We have to then make that drug. Then once we have the right drug, we have to figure out which patients will respond.
Scientists are answering these questions using clinical trials of AI-developed medicines. The problem, says South African medical scientist Kelly Chibale, is that the new drugs are being tested exclusively in the United States and Europe.
Historically, medicines have not been optimized for the African patient population. One reason is that we have a very low volume of clinical trials that happen on the African continent, between 3% and 4%, which means that this huge genetic diversity that we have on the African continent is not well accounted for. We've got to address this by increasing the number of clinical trials that happen on the continent and the number of Africans participating in those clinical trials. Medicines or vaccines are optimized in terms of the dosages, dosing regimens on people that participate in those clinical trials.
Chibale at the University of Cape Town says medicines that work for Westerners won't necessarily work well for Africans. Genetic differences, for instance, mean that many people in Africa have an enzyme variant that causes severe side effects from the antiretroviral drug efavirenz used to treat HIV. But he says if medicines made using AI work in Africa with its vast gene pool, they'll likely work elsewhere.
Actually, everybody's an African. Everybody came from Africa if you look at the history of humanity. So I would even argue that every clinical trial actually has to start in Africa, because the world can really benefit from this huge genetic diversity that we have on our continent.
He says until now, Africa has been excluded from participating in major advances in medicines. Chibale says it's up to African authorities, in particular the African Medicines Agency, which operates under the African Union, to ensure the same does not happen with drugs made using AI.
So I think in Africa, at the policy level, there's got to be a requirement in every country on this continent that any medicine or vaccine that is going to be approved or licensed for use in these countries has to be tested on the local population.
Two of the world's major pharmaceutical companies, GlaxoSmithKline and Novartis, are co-sponsoring a project in South Africa designed to drive the testing of medicines made by AI technology in Africa. Chibale hopes other pharmaceutical multinationals will soon also sign up. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In the 2024 U.S. presidential campaign, candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both using artificial intelligence to attract voters. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns reports on machine learning in this U.S. election.
For political campaigns looking to best target the most voters most economically, generative artificial intelligence is the biggest change in politics. Scott Babwa Brennan watches online misinformation and political advertising at the University of North Carolina.
the models are getting better very rapidly. It feels like every week there's some new model which is significantly better than a previous model.
Those models are powerful tools for campaigns at the national level and at the local level, says political strategist Betsy Hoover.
Think about the campaign that does not have digital staff at all, and therefore really doesn't have a digital content program. Like, generative AI allows them to have one, and a pretty robust one if they want to. Or think about a candidate who's running against a well-funded incumbent. AI has a huge role to play in that campaign.
Hoover's firm invests in developing technology for Democratic Party and left-leaning causes. She says the key to machine learning in politics is, quote, doing it the right way.
I don't really know exactly what every Republican campaign would say their standards are, but I do know that Democrats have a high standard for how we're going to use this new technology. And so I'm not really worried about falling behind if it is not ethical and responsible use of AI.
In 2016, the Trump campaign used unprecedented social media advertising with hyper-personalized messages, working with the British data mining firm Cambridge Analytica to directly target individual voters in swing states. Brad Parsail was that campaign's senior advisor for data and digital operations. His firm, Campaign Nucleus, powers the 2024 Trump website. Parsail told a conservative Freedom Fest conference earlier this year that artificial intelligence can analyze voter data to create mass personalized text and email ads and deploy paid workers to pick up absentee ballots.
In a couple years, you're going to be able to have this running for office on your cell phone, an AI-driven press release machine, write your campaign emails, fundraising tech, everything right on your cell phone, all built for you.
It's not just the campaigns. Polling by the American Press Institute and the Associated Press show 42% of American voters worry that news outlets will use generative artificial intelligence to create stories during this campaign. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Images of African senior citizens walking a fashion runway created a buzz on social media, with artificial intelligence-generated pictures challenging traditional depictions of elderly Africans. VOA's Karina Chaudhry has all the looks in this week's episode of Log On.
Malik Afegbua's images showing African senior citizens walking the runway in fashionable clothing went viral on social media. The Nigerian-based filmmaker and visual artist used artificial intelligence to help create fashion show for the elders, using machine learning to present African senior citizens in ways rarely seen.
The Elder series is about showing the elder society in a place that is not marginalized, you know, in a place that they're spoken for in pop culture, fashion, and other industries that we don't normally see them.
Now he is collaborating with designers at Marvel Studios. Ruth E. Carter, the Oscar-winning costume designer for the movie Black Panther, was one of the many people who reached out to Afegbua about his work.
We have worked on something already where we created the art direction of some sort and the costume for the main actor, which is for Blade.
Using artificial intelligence has raised ethical questions, with some arguing that it undermines human-created art. Afegbua says AI is an artistic tool.
You cannot create what I created with AI because you don't even know how I did it. That's because I created it with my own data sets as a tool.
In the heart of Amsterdam, a celebration is brewing.
During Africa Fashion Week Amsterdam 2023, Afegbua brought his digital fashion show to life.
The crowd will go wild, man!
Afegbua plans to bring his fashion show for the elders to a runway in Nigeria in early 2024, this time with everyday mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, and grandparents, celebrating them in fashion.
Karina Chaudhry, VOA News.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.